Good evening, everyone. Welcome back to my podcast series. Welcome to the Winner's Circle. This evening, I have a special guest. His name is Chris. And I met Chris in BVS, Black Vegan Social, on Facebook. So we're both vegan. And I have him on the show tonight just so he can kind of talk about his vegan journey, why he's vegan, a few different things, and his catering business that he has called Culture Kitchen. So, Chris, how are you tonight? Thank you for coming.
I'm good, Tamika. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, yeah. I'm doing good. How you doing?
Good. Thank you. Thank you. How was your day?
My day was good. How was yours?
Pretty good. Busy. Busy as always, but, you know, It's okay. Nonstop. So I want to kind of jump in and just kind of talk a little bit about, you know, your vegan journey. Have you always been vegan? When did you become vegan? Like, what made you want to become a vegan or plant-based?
Okay. Good question. So I was not vegan my entire life. Mm-hmm. Like most people.
Right.
I grew up eating the standard American diet, basically. And I want to say last year. Yeah. So June of this year was my 1 year vegan anniversary.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
Happy vegan anniversary. Months later.
Thank Thanks. It's been over a year. So that's when I started transitioning to veganism. Mm-hmm. Mainly because the meat and dairy my body was rejecting it, basically.
Okay.
And I couldn't eat it no more. I mean, I could eat it, but I would pay for it later, basically. And I got tired of it. So I started looking at different diets. You know, I tried pescatarian. I thought it was just at one point I thought it was just chicken and red meat and pork.
Right.
So I cut all that out and I just ate seafood, but I'm not really a big seafood person. I was like, okay, this is not working. Then I came across Dr. Sabi videos on YouTube, and that actually opened my eyes up to the alkaline vegan and then the vegan community. So that's pretty much how I got started. Yeah,
I was going to say I got started I did a lot of different things. I didn't intentionally become vegan. It kind of happened where I was doing a Ramadan fast with one of my friends. Like a year before I became vegan, plant-based. Mm-hmm. And then just the mentality kind of stuck of if you're going to eat, you know, when we break fast and that whole thing, make it something worthwhile, you know? And so that mentality stuck. And at the same time, too, I was watching a lot of different videos in terms of like food and health conscious videos about food and spirituality and all that kind of stuff. And Dr. Sabi, a lot of his videos, I also watched as well. So that definitely kind of piqued my interest a little bit more. And then I just, you know, I had joined Black Vegan Social at the time. And then it kind of just was like, wow, this is great, because I didn't find it hard to do. But at the same time, I kind of was already health conscious and somewhat plant-based anyhow to begin with. So I didn't feel like I was missing anything or giving anything up. But yeah, Dr. Sabi's videos were definitely important to watch and just had a lot of different knowledge in it. So why do you feel, you know, you did veganism for yourself, just for health reasons, health concerns, and like your diet? Do you feel, you know, for the Black community, this is something that we all should adapt to? Or what are your thoughts about veganism and why it's important to the Black community?
Oh, yes, definitely. I 100% agree that veganism is needed in the Black community, mainly because, you know, throughout our history, you know, we can go, slavery time or whatever. And, you know, our ancestors was eating table scraps, and they were eating and would take the table scraps and make what we know now as soul food with the chitlins and the ham hocks and all the other stuff. And, you know, back in those days, back in those early times, you know, meat was actually a luxury. It wasn't something that, you know, you could just go to the store and just buy it. You know, only the rich was eating it. And
right.
Throughout history and throughout generations, you know, that way of eating has just been passed down. And you have, you know, mainly the pork. That was the right. biggest thing, because, you know, that was the main food that a lot of our ancestors ate. And it's one of the main foods that's in soul food. So you have a lot of sodium that's being pumped into the bacon, and it causes hypertension, high blood pressure. You know, you have, you know, the candy yams, where people are putting a lot of sugar in it, and that aids towards diabetes. You know, all the high starchy foods that all the high starchy foods that spike your blood sugar, and then it drops, and, you know, your pancreas is pumping insulin, and it's a whole mess. And, you know, it's funny because it's not funny, but ironically, you know, our community, the Black community, you know, we lead in hypertension and blood pressure and diabetes, and these and a lot of these quote unquote diseases can be somewhat, you know, reversed with a plant-based diet. So, I think that veganism is definitely needed in our community, because in our communities, in the hoods and the ghettos, we have food deserts. You know, there's no Whole Foods in the middle of the hood. There's no Whole Foods, you know, in the ghetto. You don't have that. You know, you got to go out to the county or the suburbs, or, you know, you got to go out to where the rich people at to get the organic fruits and vegetables, the Whole Foods, the Sprouts, you know, those type of grocery stores, you know. And, you know, I just think that our people need to be more health conscious, in a sense, you know.
Right.
And I honestly think that, you know, with veganism, I think veganism is a way to actually save health issues in the Black community. Like, I honestly do. Like, you know, getting off of the dairy, you know, drink some hemp milk, drink some oat milk. You know, right. I'm team oat milk. Okay. Like,
that's, yeah, I like oat milk.
Yeah, that's my thing right there. Oat milk, that saved me. And anybody that's trying to transition, I always tell them, you know, I would even show them the picture. Like, listen, this is the oat milk that I drink. I promise you, if you drink this, you won't even think about drinking cow's milk anymore. You know,
right?
And I just, you know, I just really feel that, you know, like I said, with the veganism, it's a lifestyle. You know, this is not a fad. You know, this is actually a way of life, and you would be surprised how the food. A lot of our people don't realize that the food that we eat, it influences our morale, our character. Mm-hmm. It plays a part in a lot of things, and a lot of people don't realize that the food that we eat affects us in so many different ways, you know. And we only have one body, we only have one temple, you know. Let's put the good stuff in it, not the bad stuff. So, you know, to all my
people. I completely agree too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, all my people out there with the fried chicken, like, you know, like, you go to any, you know, corner carry out, you got the fried chicken and the French fries and the hamburgers and the cheeseburgers, and you got all that stuff, you know, because that's what's readily available, all the McDonald's and all that. But if you go out to the suburbs, you know, you see it, but it's not on every corner like it is in the inner cities.
It's spread out, and you see more other options. You actually see a lot more, I want to say, like, mom and pop shops where they're actually doing, like, homemade items or foods or whatever, and it's less, you know, processed and all that kind of stuff, whether it's vegan or not, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's more health conscious, or you have more health conscious stores in those neighborhoods. I agree. I do. I feel like for our community to kind of take control over our health, changing our diet is something that does need to be done in a preventative measure, but also to kind of help aid if somebody is, you know, dealing with diabetes or anything like high blood pressure or anything like that. Just changing your diet and consistently over time, you'll see a change with that, you know?
I agree.
So I do think it is, it's a big deal. And I feel like a lot of our people are starting to wake up to that. Some people I feel like are vegan because it's the trend. Like everywhere you go now is like vegan, vegan. Like it's literally like a trend now. Like it's cool to be vegan. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And eventually I feel like those people will catch on to the real knowledge behind it. But okay, hop on the trend then, you know? But I think, you know, some people, they're doing it because of the trend. Some people are doing it because they are becoming more health conscious and they're trying to figure out what works for their lifestyle, you know, their schedule or those kind of different things. So, yeah, I do think it's important for our community, too. So let's talk about your catering business. It's called Culture Kitchen. And I remember, because we're in BVS together, so I know you from there, and we're Facebook friends and IG, we follow each other. And I kind of saw when you started it, and then you did the YouTube channel for it. And, like, your food, honestly, it looks so good. Like, you wouldn't even know that. You're welcome. You wouldn't even know that it's vegan food. You would just be like, oh, my God, that's bomb. Like, I'm hungry now. And then I've seen it, and I wasn't even hungry, but I've seen the pictures, and I'm like, God, I want something to eat now. Like, so it looks really good. I haven't had the opportunity to taste it yet.
Not yet, but soon.
Soon, yes, hopefully soon. So let's talk about Culture Kitchen, your business. What kind of prompted you to start that, and how did you come up with the name?
Okay, so funny story. So when I originally came up with Culture Kitchen, it was around the time that I started getting somewhat halfway decent with cooking my own, making my own vegan meals. And I came across Slutty Vegan. And I watched Slutty Vegan on YouTube. I'm like, what is this place? It's, you know, it's down in Atlanta. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, okay, it's burgers, fries. Okay, cool. You know, at the time, my wife and I, we were strapped for money. And I always had an entrepreneur mindset. Like, I always wanted to own my own business. So I told her, I said, well, listen, like, I'm vegan. And I see vegan is, quote unquote, the new trend. And there's nothing here in our local area that's doing stuff that's similar to Slutty Vegan. And what they're doing is working. Why not bring it here? So that was kind of the idea at one point. And then I realized that, okay, I have to figure out how I'm going to get these to people, because my living situation at the time, I couldn't have people just come up to the house. So I was like, okay, let me scratch that. Let me start a YouTube channel. You know, you can get paid from having a YouTube channel. So I'm going to make recipe videos and I'm going to make vegan food from foods from different ethnic backgrounds. So the name Culture Kitchen is, the name Culture Kitchen was birthed from the idea of taking different cuisines from different nationalities and bringing them all into one, under one umbrella. So, you know, and Culture Kitchen, I can make vegan Indian food, Mediterranean food, Asian, Japanese food, American food, Caribbean food, and Italian food. So you have all these different ethnic, you know, foods or dishes, and they're all made at Culture Kitchen. So no matter if you are Italian, no matter if you are from Asia, no matter if you're from, you know, Italy, you come to Culture Kitchen, I got something for you that reminds you of home.
Right.
So that's where that came from. Yeah.
So let's talk about how Culture Kitchen is spelled. So culture is spelled with the letter K, and then obviously kitchen is too. How did you come up with that? Like, why didn't you decide to do culture with a C and call it Culture Kitchen that way? Why did you choose Culture Kitchen and spell culture with the K?
Honestly, just to stand out and be different. That's literally it, though.
I like it. It just looks like it kind of just goes together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Okay. And so the foods that you make are vegan. And, you know, I've been seeing lately or recently that you've also been doing natural juices, natural fruit juices, and vegetable juices. How's that going? Is that something that is kind of like a specialty that you're doing, or is that something now that you've definitely included in your menu?
It is not included in the menu. That is something that I was just doing for, like, friends and family. And mainly for myself. So I'll make a juice and I'll post videos online on how to make juices. Right. So to influence people and say, hey, listen, like on some mornings, instead of, you know, eating a bowl of grits or oatmeal or making some toast, have some fresh cold pressed juice. And I will actually make the videos. I will actually make the video showing how to make the juice so people can know how to make it. And yeah, that's that. But as far as adding to the menu, that's probably not going to happen unless I get picked up by like a financial investor and I have the manpower where we can push juice out in a professional kitchen. But right now with my little Omega juicer, nah, that's not happening.
Yeah, and it's just you doing all
it's
this.
It's just me doing everything, so nah.
Yeah. Okay. So right now you're located in Maryland?
Yes, I'm in Baltimore.
In Baltimore. Okay. So now with your services, it's a catering business that you have, and so you provide the meals for people, and sometimes I guess they pick them up. Do you also travel to give out the plates that people are ordering, or what is that? How does that work?
Yeah. So, so right now I'm in Baltimore and I'm only doing pickups locally here in the Baltimore area. So basically the way it works is I will create a flyer. I will put the flyer out on my social media channels, on my IG and my Facebook. And then people will order, they will order the food and prepay before Friday, because I do deliveries. I do pickups on Saturdays and Sundays. So they will pay for the food by Friday. And then Saturdays and Sundays, I will basically either have people come to my apartment and they can pick the food up there if that's closer, or if it's somebody coming from DC or from other surrounding counties of Baltimore, there's a spot that's off 95 that I normally go to, and it's a parking lot, and I just tell them where I'm at. They come, get the food, we chat, we talk. You know, people sometimes they treat me like I'm a little celebrity, and they get a little, you know, starstruck, like, oh my gosh. I'm like, no, I'm a regular person, you know. I just make good food, you know, and, you know, we talk and, you know, exchange contact information, and that's pretty much what happens. Now, I will say that a lot of people have been inquiring on me shipping my food like nationwide, and right now the only thing that I'm working on shipping are my Jamaican beefless patties. The rest of my food, that's going to be available locally only. And the only reason why I'm shipping the Jamaican patties is because I'm trying to get distribution and I want them in grocery stores. So I want them to be available for everyone. Right. So, yeah.
And that's something more of that you can pack in a box, and it can be larger quantities, I think.
Exactly.
You know, per box and for people to have. Yeah. Okay. That sounds all good. So what have you learned when you are like in your vegan journey, and when it comes to actually cooking, like what are some of the things like you may like recipe things that you've learned that you didn't know before, or that you tried and like it was a fail and like, okay, that's not how you make this. I actually got to do it this way. What are some of those experiences like?
I will say that. When I was learning how to fry oyster mushrooms, I didn't really know how to make my oyster mushrooms very crunchy. And the first couple of times that I made them, they were soggy within like 2 or 3 minutes, like coming out of the oil. Then what I did was I started reading up on, you know, why do fried foods get soggy after you take them out? And I found out that a lot of times people are just putting them on paper towels. And yeah, this is crazy. Like people put them on paper towels. And when you put them on paper towels, the paper towel is actually, it actually makes the food soggy versus putting the oyster mushrooms on a cooling rack and then let the oil drip from there. They actually retain the crunchiness and the crispiness. I didn't know that.
Okay. I never would have thought that either.
Like I came across it. I was on YouTube, watching like different like egg roll videos, because my vegan egg rolls, they were getting soggy at one point and I didn't know why. And you know, the guy was like, don't put them on a paper towel, put them on a cooling rack, they'll stay crispy. And then I applied that same, you know, method when I make my fried oyster mushrooms, and you know, when I in my fried cauliflower, And I've had people, when I make my fried cauliflower bowls and I put them in sauce and I toss them in the sauce, you have to make sure that the batter is extra crispy, because once that sauce penetrates the breading, you know, if there's not enough breading on there, your cauliflower is going to be like mad soggy, and you don't want to eat that. So a lot of people told me, like, hey, listen, like, I just left you an hour ago and my cauliflower is still crunchy. And I'm thinking to myself, like, wow, like, I made that cauliflower like 2 hours ago. I was like, ooh, you know, so I'm like, okay. So, you know, that's a little nugget, you know. And yeah, but I mean, you have that, you have I've messed up making sea moss, believe it or not. You know, just a lot of trauma there. Vegan mac and cheese, which is the number one thing that I think all vegans have problems with when they first start off, is vegan mac and cheese.
Yeah, they try to master it. Like, because that's you know, growing up Black, you know, that was one of the staples. Like, you had to have your bacon mac and cheese.
Yes.
You know? And it was like, okay, now if you're plant-based and vegan, like, oh, you gotta let that go. But then, like, how can I make it and make it kind of taste good? Like, how, you know? So that is one thing. One of the things, because I'm more plant-based, but occasionally I'll eat, like, vegan food. And before I was plant-based, I loved to bake, you know, cakes, cookies, pies, all that kind of stuff. And most pies I still do, because those are, like, accidental vegan. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But, you know, I have to practice more on baking cakes and, like, muffins and things of that nature. Because when you bake those types of things, you're used to a certain base. And that base now, you can't use that, you know? And so when I've tried to attempt to make like a bread or like muffins or like a cake or something, I'll be honest, it's been like an epic fail. And I'm like, oh my God, you know? Yeah. I'm like, ooh, I can't post this, you know? And I take like a few bites. If it's, you know, if it tastes kind of good, it just might not look good. But, you know, and the kids will have some, then I'll just kind of like trash the rest. But I would say that is, that is something that I do want to start working on to kind of get better at. Because it is different. The ingredients that you're using now is totally different. You're no longer using like eggs and flour and, you know, the bait and butter and things like that. You have to find like those substitutes so you can have that right consistency, but that also at the same time, it'll bake how it's supposed to bake. So that's one of the things that I've kind of learned, like, you know, on my vegan journey or my plant-based journey, is like when it comes to the baking, it's completely different. So it's like a whole new way of learning how to do stuff from scratch, which is pretty interesting. So let's see. When you started Culture Kitchen, what was your initial vision for your business? Was it something where you were just kind of like, you know, I'm gonna just do this and, you know, provide something? Like, where do you see it like years from now?
Okay, so when I first started Culture Kitchen, like I said earlier, like I just looked at it as, okay, I'm gonna create this YouTube channel. And then, you know, make some money so I can supplement and, you know, pay some bills and, you know, share my gift with the world. And that was that. And then the last year, it turned into something completely different. And now I am getting, you know, brands are reaching out to me for brand deals where all I have to do is like post their product on my IG stories and make a little commission from it, you know? Things that's like awesome. That. I have, you know, I want to come out with a t-shirt. I want to come out with like vegan t-shirts. T-shirts with like vegan, like, you know, slogans or sayings or whatever, like little funny shirts or whatever. Right. And then Jamaican beefless patties. Like those patties have taken a life on its own. Like, it's to the point now where that's actually where my drive is, because if I can start, you know, coming up with a brand, you know, I can start having like Culture Kitchen beefless patties or empanadas or, you know, my different sauces and have that in grocery stores, you know, and that's pretty powerful. And, you know, so that's an option as well. And you know, just catering to my local area here in Baltimore and traveling. I want to travel and meet, you know, a lot of people like you and a lot of other people that follow me on Facebook and Instagram. Like I want to network with people and veganism has actually opened up a whole new world of people. And I am so grateful because like I'm meeting people that I would have never met had I not been vegan and, you know, came into this community.
Right. I was going to say that's so true because you kind of see being on Facebook and being in the different vegan groups, you kind of see the same vegans in every single group, which is a good thing. It's still nice to see the familiar faces, but you kind of see that like, oh, yeah, they're in another group. Oh, they're in another group. And that's how you kind of build that rapport with them and that relationship and you're cool with them. And you like you're friends with them on regular Facebook outside of the groups. And then even still, too, you know, on Instagram, you kind of follow the same pages, the same other vegan cooks or bakers or chefs or what have you. And, you know, just the same kind of, you know, community thing. And so you start, again, building a rapport and like those friendships and networking and things of that nature. So we talked about the merchandise and how you want to do t-shirts and just a little bit about the opportunities you want to do with Culture Kitchen. And it is funny how you didn't see it as this initially when you started it, but it's evolved to so much and you can kind of branch out to do many different things. I think the traveling piece of it is awesome. I mean, I watched the Travel Channel a lot, you know, back in the day, and just I think his name was Andrew Zimmern. I forget his name, but he literally all he did was travel the world to different countries and eat their specialties, you know, and that's just a great opportunity. Like, who would have thought you just had to travel and eat and you could see the whole world? So I think that in terms of travel could definitely open up a lot of doors for you and a lot of travel, international travel, and just putting you out there to, again, meeting other vegans in other countries and just what that can provide for you. Have you done any events locally in Maryland, like, you know, food events over the summer or, you know, cook-offs or things of that nature?
I have not. I was going to participate in the vegan festival that we have here in Baltimore every year, but you know, COVID happened, so that got shut down. And you know, recently, as of last week, I was invited to be a vendor at an expo, a little small expo, nice. And they were looking for like 8 vendors, and this young lady contacted me on Instagram. And she's like, oh my gosh, your food looks so bomb. Can you please bring it to this expo? And I was like, okay. And then she's like, here's the flyer. Here's the owner. Can you contact him? Like, we need your food. I'm like, okay. When I'm making my food, you know, I see it every day. So it's like, it's nothing to me. But people, like, people are like, excited to eat my food, and it's humbling to me, and it puts a smile on my face, and I'm just like, wow.
Well, I have to ask then, so were you a chef like this in the kitchen pre-vegan days, or were you not this much in the kitchen?
I've pretty much been in the kitchen my whole life. I mean, I started out when I was like a kid. Funny thing is, my cousin and I, we used to act like we had our own cooking show, making bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches in the morning. True story. And then,
corner store favorite,
you know. And then we would always go to the corner store. We would either get quarter waters or Arizona iced teas. And then we would make our bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches. And our grandmother would just look at us and just, like, shake her head like, you know, y'all crazy. But, and then it evolved. And then, you know, my cousin, you know, he went down a certain path where he was working with his father in his catering business, and they cook soul food. You know, I pretty much was just cooking for myself. I wasn't really working in like a kitchen. And then when I met my wife, you know, since I was always, you know, prior to me and my wife, I was always cooking for myself. So I literally was eating like bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches, pancakes, you know, fried chicken and French fries. Like I wasn't really cooking until, you know, we had kids and I had to start cooking for the family. And at one point, you know, she told me, she was like, bro, you can't just keep making chicken tenders and French fries, like make some real food. And I don't back down from challenges, you know? So here we are, you know, X amount of years later, and I'm the cook in the house. Like, I cook everything. So, yeah, my kids, they don't even want their mother to cook anymore. They're like, no, we want daddy to cook. Like, yeah, it's crazy.
Wow. You know? That's a nice break for her, though.
It is.
I'm sure. Yeah. Nice. That's awesome. Let's see here. I'm just excited because I'm sitting here thinking like because I know what it looks like. So I'm picturing your food that you post and I can only imagine what it tastes like. And you talking about your childhood memory of you and your cousin and having your own cooking show, like that's a real life possibility now. And, you know, so many things stem from it. Like you can have your own cookbook. So like there's so many different things you could do with this. And it's funny how just like one little idea kind of just is like a mustard seed and then it just like exploded and went into something else. So we talked about the opportunities. And so just really quickly, a lot of everything is just vegan, but do you have, do you cater to the meat eaters at all? Or is it just always strictly vegan? Like, do you have people who want, you know, chicken and stuff like that, or you just strictly
strictly only vegan. So if I cater to them, they're getting vegan food. But as far as like cooking like meat and things like that, I'm the only vegan in my family. So I still cook. I still cook it, but I only cook it for my kids and my wife. Like, I don't cook it for nobody else. So they love seafood because they're, you know, they're from Baltimore. I'm not from Baltimore. They're from Baltimore. And they love their seafood.
Okay.
And they're like, daddy, you have to make, and I can make it. So I just make it, but I don't eat it, you know, and I have my own pots and pans for their food. And then I have my vegan equipment. So, you know, and just to make sure there's no cross contamination. But yeah, like I don't, if people come to me and they ask me like, listen, like, can you cater? I'm like, yeah, but I'm not making, it's going to be vegan. I'm not making no fried chicken. I'm not making no steak, no lamb chops, none of that. And they're like, yeah, okay, thanks. And then I don't hear from them. So I'm like, yeah, I'm stepping away from that.
Right.
If people want me to cater, it has to be vegan food. And I'll only cater to like really small parties because I'm a one man team. And that, so.
Yeah. You don't want to overwork yourself either. So I know that you have to buy all these things now, these different foods and, you know, these vegetables and fruits and trying all these different recipes. What's your experience like with finding some of these items, like the oyster mushrooms and, you know, these different ingredients that you're using to make these vegan meals? Do you find that it's harder to find them in some places versus others? And like, you know, some items are cheaper than others. You know, what's your experience with that in terms of shopping?
Yeah, so as far as shopping, I can pretty much get anything I want for the most part. Oyster mushrooms are very easy to find here in Baltimore. In Baltimore, we have we have a couple of Asian grocery stores, and in those Asian grocery stores, they have a lot of the oyster mushrooms, enoki mushrooms, the king oyster mushrooms. They have a lot of alkaline fruits like burro bananas. So yeah, a lot of your seeded fruits are found in a lot of the Asian markets and grocery stores and the international grocery stores here in Baltimore versus your big commercial chains. That's where you find more of like your seedless fruit, which I try to stay away from. But you know, if that's all I can afford, I'll eat seedless grapes before I eat, you know, a Whopper Jr., you know. So as far as like prices, for the most part, as long as I stay away from Whole Foods, I'm good.
It's kind of pricey in there. So I think I remember, oh, that's what I was going to say. I think a lot of people see you as a celebrity on your, you know, on your side, because you're giving them something that they don't have every day. And so the word spreads, you know, people talk and everybody's just like, oh, I've got to try this. And they're so excited yeah. about it. You know what I mean? I think that's why it's, you're so big at where you're at as well, which is great. I think I remember at one time you were interviewed for a newspaper article. How was that experience? And then, like, you know, seeing that printed and that kind of thing. How did that feel?
excuse me. That was that came out of nowhere. You know, that came out of nowhere. Wow, I have a friend in LA. And, you know, she's vegan, and I met her in Black Vegan Social, and, you know, we hit it off, we clicked, you know, we shared a lot of good ideas together, and, you know, one day she was like, hey, you know, this lady just interviewed me, and she was looking for more vegan content creators, so I gave her your name, you're going to get a, she's going to hit you up on Facebook, and then she hit me up, I gave her my email address, I answered some questions. And then the article was published like six to 8 weeks later. And when I saw it and I was like, wow, nice. I'm actually in a publication. That was an eye opener for me. Like, yeah, this little idea I had is actually growing into something else. Yeah.
Right. That's awesome. I remember seeing that and I was like, wow. I was like, he's in a newspaper article. Yeah. I was like, that's so amazing. That's so good. So we talked about your experience a little bit, and you know, you said you've always had like the entrepreneur mindset. So what advice, you know, going through this for yourself now, what advice would you give to someone who wants to start a business, and like specifically a food business? What are some things that you've learned on the business side of things? Like, okay, I'm never doing that again, or, oh, I wish I had known that before I did this, or, okay, you know?
Yeah. So, if there's anybody out there listening that wants to get into the food business, the first thing you want to do is actually study your market. You want to study your market. You want to learn your market. Mm-hmm. You want to study and learn your niche. And then from there, you want to make sure that you actually prep the night before. The first day I actually went public with my flyers saying, hey, I'm going to offer my food to the public. I was running around like a chicken with his head cut off. I didn't prep properly. I woke up around like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I didn't finish cooking until about 4 or 5 o'clock that evening. I cooked for 12 straight hours. Yeah.
Wow.
Because I had to prep and cook. So I was in the kitchen on my feet for about 12 hours, and I would never do that again. You know, another thing is, you know, like when you're shopping, make sure that, you know, try to bargain shop, if that's a good way of saying it. Like try to go to the grocery stores where, you know, you can get deals, and, you know, there may be a buy one, get one, you know, whatever percent off or whatever. Avoid Whole Foods at all costs. I say that not to bash Whole Foods, because they have a cheese that I use for my mac and cheese and for my cheese sauces that I can't get nowhere else here in Baltimore. But other than that, I don't go to Whole Foods. I literally go to Whole Foods for one thing, and that's my vegan cheese. Other than that, I stay away from Whole Foods. You know, a lot of times I buy a lot of my, because I read a lot of labels. A lot of times I do a lot of my grocery shopping at like Aldi's, Walmart. Where else? You know, a couple of local food chains here in Baltimore, like Giant Foods. Then you have Wegmans. But yeah, I would stay away from, you know, expensive grocery shopping, in a sense, because, you know, slapping organic on a product automatically marks the price up like $2 to $3, and that's ridiculous. But you know, if anybody is starting off, you know, just know that you're going to stumble and mess up, but at the same time, just stick with it. You got to stick with it, because it's going to get better and it's going to get easier. In the beginning, you're going to stumble. You may not you know, make the mistakes I made. But somewhere along the line, you're going to say, you know what, I could have did this better, where I could have been more efficient. And that's where I'm at now. You know, now I have orders in this weekend. So this weekend, I'm actually making my vegan crunch wraps and my vegan Jamaican patty platters. Nobody really ordered the platters. Nice. Everybody's ordering my crunch wraps since they saw the picture that I posted a couple of days ago. Right now, I have about 20 to 25 crunch wraps I have to make. But having the experience, I know now, like, okay, this is getting prepped Friday night. Saturday morning, all I got to do is wake up, make the crunch wraps, label them, and then give them to the people. And it's going to take me a couple of hours, and then I'm done, you know?
Right.
But had I had the same mindset I had when I first started, where I was ignorant and I didn't know anything, I did all my prepping and everything the day of. And I literally was in the kitchen all day. And then, you know, I'm telling people, like, the food's going to be ready by this time, you know? And it wasn't. But the thing with me, I'm all about integrity. If I'm going to be late, I'm going to tell you. And if you know, I apologize for being tardy. I even offered to, like, you know, refund a certain percentage because I was about 45 minutes late from the drop-off point. And people was like, nah, we cool. We know you just started. And they work with me. And I think because of my customer service and, you know, because my food was delicious, it kind of saved me. Now, had the food been trash, I probably would have lost about, like, 10 customers. Like, I'm not even going front. Like, I probably would have lost, like, 10 customers. But, you know, the fact that my food was good and these same people are actually returning, my customers are returning customers, then I know for a fact that, you know, they support me and, you know, it saved me. And that's another thing also, customer service. You have to – I cannot focus on – I can't emphasize on this enough. In the food business, customer service is key. I promise you, you would save so much business if you implement great customer service. I don't care how good your food is. If your customer service is trash, people will not eat your food just based off of the experience and how they feel in your restaurant. True story, you know?
Yeah, very true. I'm like that too when I go out. Like, if I don't like the customer service, I don't go back, whether I like the food or not. Because you're thinking like, okay, this person, well, I know for a fact for myself, if I go to a restaurant and I don't like how they, you know, the workers are or just how they're talking to me or just their attitude or their vibe about them, I'm thinking like, okay, then how y'all making my food? Like, y'all just throwing it on the plate? Like, you know what I mean? It just has a feel to it. And it's like, it's not a good feeling. And you're like, you know what? The food might be good, but I just don't like the attitude around here. Or it's just horrible customer service where they're not making sure like you're good with the food or, you know, the taste is up to par or just things like that. Because I've gone to restaurants where, you know, I mean, I make fried plantain all the time, like the sweet yellow one. I love it. And I've gone to restaurants where I'll order the sweet yellow plantain and I'll get it and hard and dry. And I'll literally be going back and forth and I'm like, this is not the right plantain. And they're trying to tell me. I'm like, do you know? I make this stuff on a regular basis in my house. Like, I know, but you know what I mean? And so it just kind of is like, okay, or like certain things that I make at home, if I go out to eat and I get it at the restaurant and it tastes like old at the restaurant, like you can always tell, you know? And so it just, those things I pay attention to. So yeah, absolutely right. Like having the customer service, especially in the food industry, is key because people are putting that in their bodies. So they want to make sure like it's in tip-top shape, like let me eat this. You know, the person's gonna have a good attitude, everything about it. So what do you see for your future for Culture Kitchen in terms of helping the Black community or contributing back to our people? Do you see yourself involved in future projects, any community service projects like community gardens or you know, like other types of nonprofit projects that, you know, deal with our kids or, you know, just so, our people in general?
Where I see Culture Kitchen helping our community, I see myself, you know, doing some nonprofit work with community gardens. I also see, you know, a lot of the youth working on my food truck. So one thing that I always wanted to do, even though I'm not from Baltimore, my kids live here. So I invest, right? And, you know, and I feel that a lot of the youth, so let me give you a little backstory. A lot of the community centers here in Baltimore, they got shut down. Okay. So the kids are forced to go to the streets.
Okay.
They don't have rec centers. All the recreation centers are closed. So there's no after school programs for like basketball or, you know, computers or, you know, just dancing or whatever. So the kids are literally forced to the streets. And, you know, one thing that I've learned is that if you give a child something constructive to do, they won't run to the streets. They only run into the streets because they have nothing else. And I also noticed that a lot of our youth in the inner cities are very gifted children. They just don't have the opportunity to showcase their skills.
Yeah.
If you give them the opportunity, they can actually, you know, whatever their gift is can manifest into something great. So, you know, I know with me, you know, once Culture Kitchen is where I want it to be at, whether it's a food truck, whether it's, you know, a brick and mortar restaurant or whatever, I don't, if you 25, 30, 35 years old, I don't want you on my food truck. Like, no, I'm not trying to be mean, but no, I want to be able to give back to the youth. So, you know, kids, you know, summer jobs, or if there's like a kid that's in high school and he's like, he or she's a senior and they can work on my food truck part time or whatever, you know, things like that. Also, you know, through food comes education. So teaching people, you know, why eating, you know, red meat is bad for you versus making your own food, teaching people how to grow their own food. You know, that's a skill that's missing from our community, you know, for years. And, you know, our ancestors, you know, I know for me, I can speak for myself, my grandmother, you know, she's actually from Alabama. So I have roots in Alabama and North Carolina. That's where my family's from. So in Alabama, you know, my grandmother's family on her side, you know, everybody grew their own food, you know, on farms. Same thing with my grandfather on his side of the family, North Carolina. Everybody grew their own food. They moved to New York and, you know, nobody's growing food. And it's like, because of factory farming, everything's in the grocery store. And I just think that community gardens are a must. I think that teaching people, you know, the reasons why you should not be consuming dairy is a must. I think that, you know, once you show people that you can take plants and, you know, give it, if once you could take plants and give it a similar texture as the, you know, non-vegan food that you're trying to replace, it's an easy transition, because a lot of people don't realize that the food that people are eating now with the meat, especially like the chicken and the red meat and the fish and everything, you're tasting, you love the seasoning. You don't like the meat. You like the seasoning. So if you can get that same flavor in a plant-based version with similar texture, it's an easy transition.
I remember you did a video on that on Facebook, and it was so funny because you said something along the same lines, and you was like, but guess what you season the food with?
The meat with? Plants. Yeah.
And it was like plants. And it's like, it's true. Like, you know, you got your onion and you put your sweet peppers, your scallion, your garlic, like all those kind of different things. But what are those? And then that's the taste that people actually like. That's what gives it the flavor.
Like,
and that's what they like. So, yeah. That sounds really good, actually, the food truck with the youth working on the food truck. I think that's amazing.
Well, you know, just to like and piggyback off of what you just said, like, you know, a lot of people, like I tell people all the time, I'm like, listen, you don't think, I tell people all the time, like, listen, you don't think that you like the seasoning? I said, okay, take a 4 to 8 ounce piece of steak, grill it with nothing on it and eat it. And tell me if you ain't gonna spit it out. I promise you will, because there's no flavor. Right. I mean, the only thing that may give it flavor is if you get like a fatty piece of the cow, like prime rib or something like that. But but other than that, you're not really getting no flavor. And to be truthfully honest, you're basically eating herbivores. like cows, you know, cows are herbivores. Like they don't eat animals. They get their protein and they build their muscles from eating, you know, tons and tons of grass. And, you know, what a lot of people don't realize to understand is that, you know, plants are the only, you know, life force that can take the natural energy from the sun and convert that into, you know, digestible amino acids, you know, and make.
Right. It's like the only real live, I guess, quote unquote, live thing that you can eat. That's life. Dead. Everything else is literally like.
You have to kill it and you have to have it.
It's dead, you know.
Put some heat on it because your body's not, you know, your body's not built for that. And what a lot of our people don't understand is the fact that, okay, you want to take the shortcut. You want to go ahead and kill the animal, eat the animal that has all that protein. That's okay. I'm not going to say that's fine, but you know, what happens is that when you eat that meat, you are eating, you're not just eating the meat. You're not just getting the protein. That's what people don't understand. You're getting one, you're getting recycled protein. That's number one.
Right.
Number two, you're getting, you know, trauma and suffering from that animal being butchered. Mm-hmm. Three, you're getting saturated fat. You're getting high, you're getting cholesterol. You're getting all these other things. You don't even know, you know, you may be, you know, there's all these other things that's in the meat. And a lot of these factory farming companies are cutting corners. You know, they're putting food dye in the meat to make it look fresh. You know, as you know, once oxygen, you know, once blood, you know, once oxygen hits blood, it turns pale. You lose the red color or whatever. So a lot of the meat that's in grocery stores, they're pumping it with like food dye. So it looks fresh and it's not. This, you know, there's times when maggots grow in the food. Yeah. Like you don't know what's in the food. So why eat that? You know, when, that's crazy.
I've seen that at the store, like, you know, when I used to eat meat, and I would go get like a pack of chicken, you could always tell like the chicken that's been there for the longest. And sometimes I would see like little things on the chicken and I'm like, what is that? And then just even now, it's so funny now that I'm plant-based.
Oh, congratulations.
I've been plant-based for 2 years now. And, thank you. I just celebrated my veganversary last week. And, just like walking past the meat section, I literally have to hold my nose because the smell is just like, it's just something you just aren't used to anymore. And it just does not smell good. And then, you know, when you go to people's house who make, you know, who cook meat, chicken or whatever they're making, the smell is different. You know, it's like that underlying smell of just that animal. And it definitely does. Yeah, it doesn't smell good at all. But I would say, like, when you are plant-based, you are vegan. Like, those switches are real. Like, some people think, like, oh, you're exaggerating. But it's true. Like, it's your body detoxes those things completely after a while. So you don't even have it in your system. And so when you do come across it, it definitely is something that's going to stick out.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. You know, I'm really glad you touched on that point because, you know, people, you know, when I talk to people on Facebook, they're like chef, because a lot of people call me chef. So they're like chef, you still cook meat? I'm like, yeah, my kids got to eat. I mean, they eat my vegan food, but it's not like they don't come to me and say, daddy, can you make some fried oyster mushrooms? Like, nah, you know? So it's like, I still cook for them, but you know, when I cook my vegan food, they eat it, but I don't force my beliefs onto them because I raise my kids for them to think for themselves, you know? And, but one thing I have done in the past, I took them off of cow's milk when they were babies because even prior to being vegan, I knew the dangers of cow's milk and how it causes a lot of inflammation. I was just ignorant and I kept drinking it because, you know, I was being ignorant. But my children, mainly my two oldest, when they were babies, they used to always get sinus infections. Spring, summer, fall, didn't matter. So at the time I was transitioned to be more vegetarian, so I already gave up the pork, I already gave up the red meat, but I was still eating chicken and fish, right? So I came across almond milk at the time, because almond milk, it was a fad at one point. Everybody was jumping on the almond milk phase, you know, on the almond milk wave.
Yeah.
And I was drinking almond milk.
I know.
And then I told my wife, I said, yo, I got an idea. She was like, what? I was like, get them off of whole milk. She was like, what are you talking about? And I told her, I was like, I was on YouTube and I was watching videos on how, you know, whole milk and whole dairy causes a lot of inflammation. And when you really think about mucus building up and the mucus membrane being compromised, is nothing but inflammation, and it's coming from the milk. And when I was watching documentaries like What the Health and Food Inc., they actually went in and dived. They dove deep into, you know, the FDA saying that they allow a certain amount of pus in the milk. And I'm like, oh nah, my kids gotta get off this. So I kid you not. About a week to 2 weeks of them getting off of the dairy, the sinus infections went away. And she was like, you're onto something. I was like, I know. And ever since then, they haven't had cow's milk. Now I will say that sometimes they would eat ice cream, but I've been getting them to eat more of like the non-dairy ice cream.
Right.
So I would get them like the Ben and Jerry's non-dairy ice cream, or the Breyers non-dairy ice cream that's made with almond milk. But anything that's the only thing they would eat now that's still whole milk is cheese, and that's because like, you know, a lot of times that's their mom doing that, and a lot of times that's when I become passive. I'm like, you know, I'm not gonna argue about you eating cheese. Like, if you want to be constipated, that's on you. That's not me. So whatever. I'm gonna let you learn on your own. But I honestly don't like. I despise factory farming. And it's funny that you said that when you walk past in a grocery store, like, you have to hold your nose. With me, I don't have to hold my nose, but when I go into like Asian grocery stores, I have to hold my nose when I go in those stores. In regular commercial chains, I don't. Because a lot of times what happens is these Asian grocery stores, like, they have, like, seafood, you know. Well, you know, you got seafood. You have this, like, blood and stuff on the floor or whatever. And it smells. It's not.
Cleaned and prettied up.
Like, I don't like it. So a lot of times, this is one Asian mom and pop store that I go to sometimes. I actually stopped going there. And the only reason why I go there is because they have, you know, they have like the alkaline bananas, like the burrow banana. So I would go to get burrow bananas. But when I walk in, I walk in holding my nose. I pay for the food and I walk out. And they'd be looking at me like, yo, this dude's crazy. I'm like, no, I'm not crazy. It's the fact that I can't take the smell. You know, some people, yes, very strong.
And the smells are strong, especially if it's the same, if they sell it in the same place that they kind of gut it.
And I honestly think that's what's happening.
It really smells.
I honestly think that they're gutting animals. So, like, they have like a butcher house in the back where they're a slaughterhouse in the back where they're prepping the animals and they're selling it in the same store, you know. But I will say that in some cultures, in some people's, you know, some people's cultures, that's their thing and that's cool. The only thing I tell people is that I'm not gonna preach your head off why you should be vegan. I'm gonna tell you why I did it, and I'm always going to advise that you eat more vegetables and less meat.
Right.
If you're gonna eat meat, that's your prerogative. But I'm always gonna be a advocate for eating more fruits and vegetables. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same way too. I'm not the vegan police at all. And I know vegans who are the vegan police, and they even annoy me. And I'm like, okay, y'all, like, come on now. but, you know, I feel like everybody, too, like, everybody's food journey is different. So you can't force your belief or your practice or your diet on anybody else. If they're interested, they'll take their time and they'll get to it if they want to. And if they don't, just encourage them to stay eating healthy and, like you said, more fruits and more vegetables than anything else. Because before I became plant-based, during the time that I was doing Ramadan, when we would break fast and I would have a meal, I could have easily went and got pizza, McDonald's. I could have fried up some chicken, like fried up some fish, like all that kind of stuff. But what I did, it was like, no, because this is the time that the only time that I'm eating, I have to make it worthwhile. So I was actually stocking up on my plate, like a ridiculous amount of fruits and vegetables. And then a small portion of maybe like some fish, if I wanted the fish, or like chicken or whatever it was. So yeah, I kind of balanced it that way, because that thinking is true. Like, you know, some people have meat or fish in moderation. So that's a good way to balance it for them. You know, it's what, you know, everybody can't do cold turkey and be vegan and plant-based, you know, the next day. Like it, and you know, it's something that you're kind of unlearning and retraining yourself to do after a lifetime of what you've been doing. So it's definitely not something that can happen overnight. So do you have any other projects or anything else?
The only thing that I have coming up right now, I have a collaboration with a very well-known vegan ambassadors over in the UK called Bosch TV. They reached out to me and they wanted me to make some, they wanted me to like make some of their recipes and post it up on my IG. And they actually reached out to me like months ago, because they wanted, they wanted to collaborate with me, because even though this is not related to veganism, this is related to like the Black community. A lot of people in the vegan community, I think when the whole George Floyd thing happened and the Black Lives Matter was like reborn again, and I say reborn again because like Black Lives Matter started to become, I don't like it being trendy, you know, but you know, a lot of vegan, a lot of, you know, non-Black vegan content creators were reaching out to a lot of Black vegan content creators, like, hey, listen, like, you know, we want to work with you, you know, we want to, you know, show our support and this and this and this and that. That's how a lot of these brands actually reached out to me, you know, and I mean, I mean, you know, I mean, it's cool. I mean, I have my own personal beliefs or whatever, but it's cool. And you know what? If you're going to, you know, leverage your platform, you know, to show unity, then I'm all for it, you know? And I thought it was a good thing. And that's my IG channel actually grew from that. And I had the thing with PETA. For 4th of July, PETA reached out to me. When PETA reached out to me, I was like, "Oh, this is like the final boss." Yeah.
I thought I saw something like that. I was like,
"Yeah, really?" But see, like, what was like, funny was when PETA reached out to me and I shared it on my Facebook, y'all swore up and down that like this was my come up. Y'all was like, "Yo, that's it, game over. You about to be rich, homie." it's a wrap,
right?
And I was like, nah, it's not a wrap, you know, but it's good exposure. And from taking over Peter's IG for 4th of July, you know, I made my infamous, you know, vegan Big Mac, and that turned heads, you know. And a lot of people, you know, when people look at my food, they're looking at it like I didn't know vegan food can look like that. And I'm like, yeah, you just have to think outside the box. But, you know, as far as, you know, answering your question again, future projects, you know, I have the thing going on in the UK. I have possibly some pop-ups for 2021. Right now I'm working on doing a pop-up in Atlanta. I'm working on doing a pop-up on Long Island. Because I'm originally from Long Island. So I'm from Long Island. I gotta go back home. Part of New York, you know, and from. I met a dude on Facebook, and he was like, "Yo, you from Long Island?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Yo, but you in Baltimore?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Yo, come home. Like, I be doing vegan pop up events. Like, Long Island need Culture Kitchen." I'm like, "Yeah, I gotta give back. I gotta give back to my you know, my home Long Island." So, you know, we trying to work some things out with that. I am in the process of being one of the selected cooks that's going to be featured in the Slutty Vegan Cookbook for 2021. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I put my entry in, and that's so awesome. Far communications has been good. That's all I know right now, and that'd be
that's awesome. Sure.
Yeah, thank you.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, because she's been doing a lot of her things too, popping up her restaurants in different parts of Georgia, and I believe some other places too. I feel like other states. I can't name them off the top of my head right now, but I know that she's been doing other states outside of Georgia as well for new restaurant locations. So that's a good exposure to have, and that's a good collaboration. And you don't know what that can open for you too, just being in the Black community with, you know, a Black vegan and everything that she
You have that.
Yeah, she's got going, you have too. That. So and that's then awesome.
I have. It's really good. I plan on going to the West Coast in 2021 as well. I have some people that's in like Washington State, so I thought about going to Washington State just to see my peoples or whatever. You know, Atlanta, like I said already, I want to go to Texas. I want to go to the Midwest. Like, I just want to travel. I have a following in Australia. Right. I have followings all over Europe, you know, so it's like a lot of people in Europe, you know, they tell me, they're like, hey, you know, when COVID calms down, you need to fly over here. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna fly over there, you know? And, you know, I know they're gonna show me some love. You know, I've never been to the West Coast. So going to Cali is gonna be really exciting for me because I have a following, and I have a following in California as well. Right. I pretty much have a small following in every corner of this country.
Right.
And, you know, yeah. And everybody is like, I want Culture Kitchen food. And I'm like, well, you know, that's what kind of like wanted me to do like a tour in a sense where, you know, a couple of weekends every quarter of the year, I go to different regions of the country. And one thing that I ask is that, you know, I have people in these regions that's going to help me coordinate the pop-ups. So whether it's, you know, helping me lock down, you know, letting me use your house, you know, or, you know, I get like an Airbnb. Right. If the owner of the Airbnb, you know, allows to have events on their property, you know, if I get my food truck, then I'm just going to like pull up. You know what I'm saying? Like, just pull up.
Literally,
so that's the main reason why I wanted a food truck is because, you know, it could just be me and my truck and we can ride, you know, from the East Coast to down south to the West Coast to the Midwest, you know, to the Great Plains, and just bless everybody with this, you know, Culture Kitchen love, you know?
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I can see that. I can definitely see that happening. I definitely can see that happening. So you do have a, I don't know if it's a slogan that you've created, but I see it all the time when you post your Facebook, your food pictures on Facebook and IG.
Yeah.
The OE cooking. Is it? Are you saying it a certain way when you post it, or is that something you say while you cook the food and prepare it, or how'd you come up with that? Because I noticed you do it for every.
OE cooking is my slogan.
Maybe this is like his.
So at the end of all my YouTube videos, I always say OE cooking.
Okay.
I got it from. Okay. Like true story. Like I kid you not. I got it from Benny the Butcher. Yeah, is a rapper. I listen to a lot of hip hop, and you know, you know, when Benny, you know, he's about to come on his the track, you know, one of his track, he's like, "Oh, we cooking," and I was like, "Wait a minute, I got something." So at the end of my videos, I just started saying, "Oh, we cooking," and it just caught on. So when people see Culture Kitchen, you know. OE cooking is the subline, so it's like Culture Kitchen, OE cooking, and it just stuck. And then one day when I said it, thank you. Yeah,
I like it. I like it because when I read it, I hear like I hear, you know, the the rhythm in it, like the culture in it, the blackness. Somebody told me, like, somebody said,
I hear it, and I think it's it was a comment made on one of my YouTube videos, and one of my subscribers on YouTube was like, bro, you need to put that on some t-shirts, and you need to go copyright that right now. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm already on it, you know, because it's just it's just catchy, you know. Yeah, so
yeah, it is, it really is, and it makes it goes with what you do. So now every time you post one of your pictures, I look for that, or if I think about it, I'm like, okay, this is for his food when he posts his food pics and stuff like that. Like, it's associated now. So people definitely have that embedded in their mind that saying is associated with you and your food and all that stuff. I was going to say those kind of little things come in the weirdest ways. So like, you got yours from a rap song, and I'll tell you about my podcast series. You know how it's called Welcome to the Winner's Circle. I actually got this. And I hope there's no copyright, you know, issues with this. But anyways, I got it from, I watched The Legacy. Yes, so I know what you're talking about. Me too. Of, like, The Vampire Diaries, The Originals. And then, and so they have the third, the little third spinoff called The Legacies with the kids, like with the twins or whatever. And it was an episode where one of the twins, the blonde twin, I guess she just couldn't get anything done right that day with her magic. And everything was a fail, you know, that whole thing. And she walked into the dorm room. Her sister was already in there. And she walked into the dorm room kind of pouting and having an attitude. And then somebody else came in who was kind of like the know-it-all. But I forget what exactly was the conversation. But I remember the girl was like sarcastically like, oh, welcome to the winner's circle. And then literally, mind you, it was like 2 a.m.
There you go.
And I was like, oh, that's a good name for a podcast. And I was like, I'm going to do it. So when you said, like, you know, you got the OE cooking from like a rap song and it just kind of like hit you at that moment, I totally knew how you felt and like what you were talking about. And it's very random. Like, you wouldn't even think you would get it from wherever you got it from. You just, I don't know, just in that moment.
Yeah, that's crazy, like, because like when, so I remember... I remember listening to like the song, and I remember the way he was saying it. And then on my YouTube videos, when I was doing like the voiceovers, so basically the way I film my YouTube videos, I just like film like raw footage, and then I go and I edit and I do a voiceover. Mm-hmm. When I'm cooking, I mute the video, I mute the raw footage, and then I do a voiceover. Like that. So I do like a play by play.
Okay.
Because I noticed that like doing it like cooking show wise, being in front of a camera and just talking, even though there's nobody in the kitchen with me, I choke because I'm envisioning how people are gonna like receive it. Yeah. So I psych myself out. So what I do is I do the intro and I choke with the intro. And the intro is consistent and I still choke to this day. But you know, I do the intro. Yeah, I do the intro and then I do the voiceovers. And then when I was listening to the song and he was like, oh, we cooking. And then I put it at the end of my YouTube channel, my YouTube videos. And then at the end, it's like, you know, I always say like, you know, thank you for watching, you know, like, share, subscribe. And then I say, oh, we cooking. And then the music comes on. And ever since I've been doing it and it became part of the brand. So now when people hear, oh, we cooking, they automatically associate it with Culture Kitchen, you know? And, you know, when people, you know, a lot of times when I'm doing like IG lives with, you know, IG live interviews or, you know, other podcasts, like I'll come on like mad hype, like, oh, we cooking. And they're like, oh boy, okay, yeah, he's in the building, you know? Yeah, that's my that lets everybody know I'm in the building. So you know, it's just, you know, I got that. It creates a life. It's his own life. You know, it's his own thing. And like you said, it's amazing how these little mustard seeds come out of nowhere and they explode and they manifest into so many different things. Like, you have your podcast. You're doing great with that. I'm pretty sure your podcast probably came from an idea from some small idea. And look at you now. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, you know? And Yeah, and I didn't even know you had a podcast
until
we talked, a couple of months ago, because like I said, I see you on, I see you in BVS, I see you on IG, and then we chop it up, and then you hit me with the podcast. I'm like, hold up, you got a podcast this whole time? Like, I love listening to podcasts. Okay, give me your link. Let me listen to it, right? and now that I know that you have a podcast, one thing that I really love about me is the fact that I'm a giver, right? So, anytime I see any of my people's trying to like make it and they're trying to do their own thing, I'm always going to try to use my influence to better them. So if you have a brand, welcome to the winning circle. And if I know I can, if I know I have like a 15,000, follower, influence on Instagram or whatever social media platform, yeah, why not plug you and put you in front of these people? Mm-hmm. Because these are probably people that you don't know and they don't know you, but I could be the bridge, I could be that middleman that brings you two together. And that's one thing that I think that, we really need to, like implement in our community is networking. I feel like we do and we don't. I feel like we do in a sense, but one thing, because like I said, there's turmoil, there's backstabbing, there's a whole bunch of shady business in any community that you're in. I don't care what you do. I don't care what community you're in. I don't care, whatever your thing is, whatever your niche is. In every little mini society, there's always, backstabbers and shadiness and things like that. And the funny thing is, from the business side of, the vegan community, there is a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that I didn't know until I actually started my own business. And when I started looking at the behind the scenes stuff, I was like, wow, okay, that's how people move. Okay, cool. But, I'm just saying, that's how people move. Okay, cool. Yeah. But, I'm all about integrity. And if I see another Black person, trying to make it, I'm going to break my tail trying to bring them up with me, because I honestly feel like when we win, we all win. Like, I love celebrating other people's victories. I love it. I pumped them up more than they pumped up. Yeah.
I was going to say, I agree too, because it's the missing link in our community in terms of the generational wealth. We don't have business support for each other like we should. I think we're starting to now, things are definitely on the rise and changing, but it's still, I feel like, in the beginning stages, or it's still kind of new, or, you know what I mean? But definitely, I do think that is something that's missing. And I think that's something we have to really get more into doing. Like, it's second nature, like breathing. So, like, now we go out to the store. Oh, my God, I need to go buy some toothpaste.
Exactly.
Where are we going? We going to CVS. Who owns CVS? You know what I'm saying? Versus the Black man down the street who has his own pharmacy, who possibly could have toothpaste. Instantly our mind goes to, like, just the generic or the general other businesses. And we don't automatically think in the mind of, boy, who's Black, who can actually provide this for me first before I go elsewhere. So I think that is something that we are starting to work on and getting better at, but it's definitely going to need a lot more work. But I think that's something that is like the missing link in our community, is not just kind of supporting each other that much.
Yes. I definitely agree. Just to piggyback off what you just said. I think it's because I think it's because of the fact that systematically how we've been oppressed over, generation over generation, we were always, being manipulated, two ends against the middle. So, and I think that's a cancer in our community, where, it's a cancer in our community where it's like a lot of people in our community, they're name brand junkies, right? And a lot of times, one thing that I've learned in business is that branding is key. A lot of people don't know this, but in factories, a lot of the boots, shoes, sneakers, jackets, coats, jeans, whatever. A lot of these products are made in the same factories. The only difference is the name being stitched on the clothes. That's it. That is the only difference between you. Yeah, right. Like a lot of times, I don't
that know. Is very
like,
true.
There's a boot. There's a boot. Where Tim's are made. The factory where Timberlands are made at. Right. There's a boot that's just identical to Tim's, but because it doesn't have the tree, that's the only difference. It's the tree. It's the Timberland logo. That's it. It's the only difference. Other than that, they basically Tim's without the logo. So branding is really big in business. And one thing that I feel like our people are actually starting to do now, because I see it on Facebook all the time, you see a lot of Black-owned business groups, networking groups, where a lot of us are saying, like, hey, listen, I'm not from here. I'm out of town. I'm in this state. You know, where can I go eat some good food at? And it has to be Black-owned. And then people are like, oh, go to this person, go to that person, go to that person. And they it's just free advertisement, you know? And one thing that our people really need to understand is that, you know, my victory doesn't automatically, my victory is not the equivalent of your failure. That doesn't mean that you failed just because I won. If I won, you know, the way I look at it, if I won, we won, because I represent us at the same time. We're all ambassadors of the Black community. So when one of us win, we all win. Now, one thing that we have to do better at is, you know, strengthening the weakest link. You're only as strong as your weakest link. So, you know, people that are not as successful as you, give them the secrets. You know, tell them what you did. Give them the blueprint so they can become a millionaire. You know,
Yep, and that's true. And a lot of the things that you might find obvious to you or second nature to you, other people don't have that resource to actually even know about it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So I agree with you there too. Yeah, I've noticed a rise in those groups as well, where there's a lot more Black business oriented groups, and people can go in there and post what they want to post for their business, ask about certain services they're looking for, all those kind of things.
I've gained a customer
within our people
from that group. I was just minding my business one day. And, you know, a young lady was like, can anybody cater tomorrow night? I have a dinner and I don't feel like cooking and it needs to be vegan. And somebody actually like tagged me. And I was like, hold up, this is last minute. I'm not doing this. And then my conscience said, oh, yes, you are. You need the exposure. So I did it. And I checked in with her. Like, I could become a nuisance in a sense, because like I'm very thorough. So, you know, when you order food from me, you know, you order food from me, you know, we talk or whatever. Right. I always check in to see, you know, what you like, what you didn't like, you know, what I could have done better, because I always feel like there's always room for improvement. And, you know, and I always tell people, like, yeah, critique my food. Like, you're not going to hurt my feelings. You know, I know my food is not disgusting, but it's not the best tasting food ever neither. So there's always room for improvement, and everybody's taste buds are different, you know? So, I gained a customer all because somebody, you know, looked out for me. And I think that, you know,
that's awesome.
And people from different, you know, ethnic backgrounds and their culture, you know, group economics, networking, things like that, it's embedded in the culture. You know, this is not something that they learn. This is something that they practice since they're in diapers, you know, and it becomes part of you.
Right.
So I think that, you know, there's a new generation of, there's a new generation of Black community that's being created. And I'm actually a little excited, because, you know, I see more entrepreneurs, I see more business owners. A lot of people are waking up to the, a lot of people waking up to the, you know, college to 9-to-5 trap. And a lot of people are realizing that entrepreneurship is actually the way to financial freedom. Mm-hmm. Not punching a clock, working a 9-to-5. That's not a diss to 9-to-5s, because I got a 9-to-5. But,
yeah,
you know, the freedom and
right,
making your own rules and making your own money,
right,
that is power. That, you know, because when you punch a clock, think about it. Somebody got to tell you what to do. But when you're own, when you're your own boss, you're your own boss. Can nobody tell you nothing? You know, you can move how you want to move. Yup.
You can move how you want to move and at your own pace, and you don't have to answer to anyone or, everything is on your terms. Well, I don't have anything else for the episode. I thought it was great. We talked about a lot of different things for Culture Kitchen, and it's great to hear how it's evolving and what the opportunities, you know, that you got from this and that you'll get from this, and just how you'll give back to the community. Like I said, like a mustard seed that kind of exploded and just making like a difference. It'll make a really big difference. And people will definitely catch on whether they're vegan or not, and they just want to try vegan food for the trend. But, you know, from that, with that consistency, they may find a learning opportunity in that. It may actually change their lifestyle for the better. So that's always awesome. Do you want to provide your social media
so
for everyone?
Also,
so
I wanted to say first before I provide my social media links that I had a lot of fun on this podcast as well. We talked a lot. We covered a lot of stuff. And I also want to thank you personally. Like, you've been one of my day ones, you know. Think about it though. Like, we met like last year, you know. And
thank you.
I met you like early in my vegan journey in BVS, and you know, you've always been one of my biggest supporters, you know. And like I said, I really appreciate you, and I want to let you know that in front of the world, you know. So. Yeah, I really appreciate that, you know. And now,
thank you
so
much.
As far as
that.
Like my social media links on Instagram, as of right now on Instagram, it's at @thatplantbasedbrother. So that's at D as in David, @thatplantbased brother is spelled BROTHA. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/culturekitchen. Culture is spelled with a K, KULTURE. Kitchen is actually spelled KITCHN. Well, the actual name on my LLC Kitchen is actually spelled KITCH'N. That's the official name. But because, you know, when you're making URLs and things like that, you can't use symbols, so I had to take the apostrophe out. But and that's where you can find me at. Or that's basically where you can find me at.
Awesome. You don't have
Culture Kitchen, Culture Kitchen. So here's the thing. There's actually somebody else named Culture Kitchen that's in the UK, but he spells it as Culture Kitchen. Yeah, like the actual traditional saying. You know, with me, my spelling is different. You know, so, and I'm a little mad about that, but it's all good. You know, it's all good. But the YouTube is YouTube channel is Culture Kitchen as well. I'm actually in the process of, I'm thinking about changing my IG from That Plant-Based Brother to Culture Kitchen, just to keep everything uniform. Because a lot of times when people see me on, me on Facebook, and then they see me on Instagram, they're like, hold up, I just seen this on Culture Kitchen on Facebook. I'm like, yeah, that's me, you know? So to avoid the confusion, I'm actually thinking about changing my IG to Culture Kitchen as well. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all I have. So thank you, Chris, for being on this episode. I had a really good time. Again, we talked about a lot of different things, so I hope everyone got something from this. And I hope, you know, if anybody is ever in the Baltimore area or close to the Baltimore area, somewhere in Maryland, you hit him up, find him and hit him up and try his food, follow him on social media. And I might, you know, have to take a trip down there or something, or if you come back to Long Island.
Oh yeah, we definitely got a link.
Or something, yes, we definitely have to link up so I can try this in person because the way the pictures look,
Funny you said it. Did you see the video I posted of the young lady's reaction to my food?
I did, and I liked it a lot because it started out with her just like taking little nibbles, and it was like okay, you know. But then it ended with her actually like, "You, this is good." Like,
yeah,
like you saw the transition of it, which was nice. So that was good to see, because when I saw it initially, and she was taking her little bites, you know, the first couple of seconds, yeah, I was like, why aren't you taking little bites like that? Like, his food always looks good. Like, she should be devouring it. But then, as it kept going on.
Yeah, she had the Jamaican patty.
Yeah, it looked
good. That's actually coconut cream kale.
Jamaican patty, yeah. And she had the
one thing about me is that I create my own lane. Most people that sell vegan food, they sell collard greens. I like kale. So that's what I tell to people. So what I do is I make like a coconut.
Yeah, I like kale too.
I make like a coconut broth and like a coconut milk broth. And I actually cook the kale in that. And I may add like some vegetables to it or something. And, you know, I serve it as a side dish.
Oh, nice.
So
nice.
That's what she had. She had the cream kale, the vegan Jamaican patty, and she had some of my vegan mac and cheese. Yeah. Yeah. But did you see the response?
Awesome. Yeah, like
I got a homegirl up in Syracuse. She live upstate, right? And she's like, "Oh, that's how your food is? Yeah, bro. Free some, ship some upstate right now." I was like, "Wow." I'm trying to get that same reaction. Yeah, I'm trying to get that same reaction. That's what everybody kept saying.
Maybe one day that will be an option.
I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. So guys, follow him on social media. If you're in the Baltimore area, hit him up, get some food. When he comes back to LI, you know, to New York and Long Island, I'm sure he'll let people know. So make sure you go get something. And somehow I'm going to connect with you and I'm going to get a taste of the real thing. And thank you again. And I hope you guys got something.